Turbines that harness the wind to generate electricity are a familiar sight in many places. And in 2020, they generated 6.1% of electricity worldwide. But as more and bigger wind farms are being built, it's becoming clear that the efficiency of an individual turbine can be reduced significantly by the presence of its neighbors. To find out why, I'm joined down the line from California by Enrico Antonini of the Carnegie Institution for Science, Department of Global Ecology, and that's at Stanford University. Now, Enrico, along with his colleague Ken Caldera, has just published a paper that looks at how large an efficient wind farm can be. Hi, Enrico. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, Enrico, the atmosphere is a huge place compared to the size of even the largest wind turbine. And if you're standing out in a gale, the wind can seem like an unlimited source of energy when it blows. So some people might be surprised that too many turbines in a wind farm can reduce its overall efficiency. What are the processes that can lead to this reduction?
That's a good question. So the Earth's atmosphere extends up to hundreds of kilometers in altitude and can be divided in different layers. Most important layer for wind energy harvesting is the troposphere, which is the bottom layer that extends up to 10 or 20 kilometers in altitude. And in this layer, most of the energy exchange from the atmosphere to the turbines occur in the first 1 or 2 kilometers. And this region is called the planetary boundary layer. And also, just to give you a sense of wind turbine dimensions, the tip of modern wind turbines can reach a height between 200 and 300 meters. And so what happens in the planetary boundary layer that affects the wind farm efficiency? So let's first think about an isolated wind turbine. So this turbine extracts about 40 to 50% of the kinetic energy possessed by the mass of air that passes through the turbine. And so right downstream the turbine, there is a region of reduced wind speed. And this region is called the wake. And this reduced wind speed in the wake of a turbine takes a distance of about 10 times the rotor diameter to recover to the upstream conditions. And you can visualize this wake region as a cylinder. It is not really a cylinder, but for the sake of argument, let's imagine that. And the base of the cylinder is equal to the rotor swept area. And inside the cylinder, you have the reduced wind speed. The kinetic energy deficit of the wake is replenished by the surrounding wind that has not passed through the turbine. And so this is the wind outside of the cylindrical wake region. But now let's think about the turbines placed close to each other in a wind farm. The turbines placed in the wake of others inevitably extract less energy because they are affected by the upstream turbines. And also wakes combine and overlap with each other, creating even more energy losses. And so the more turbines you have in a wind farm, the higher are the chances that a wind turbine operates in less than ideal conditions. And ultimately, the higher are these energy losses. And so when wind farms reach a very large dimensions, what drive the energy replenishment are large-scale atmospheric forces, such as the pressure gradient and the apparent Coriolis force. And this is just an overview of the processes that determine wind farm efficiency.
In your latest research with Ken Caldera, you used fluid dynamics models to study how wind flows through turbines in a wind farm. What did you find regarding the density and positioning of turbines?
We started from two empirical observations. The first one is about the power density of wind farms at different scales. So the power density is defined as the mean power generation per unit of land occupied by a wind farm. And observations show that the power density can exceed 10 watt per square meter in small wind farms, whereas is on the order of 1 watt per square meter for very large wind farms. So you see that there is a difference of an order of magnitude between the two. And the second observation is about the wakes generated by a wind farm as a whole. So previously, I mentioned to you that the wake from an isolated wind turbine can extend up to 10 times the rotor diameter, which if you consider a diameter of 100 meters, that corresponds to a distance of 1 kilometer. However, there are observations of wakes from large wind farms that extends up to 30 or 40 kilometers. And again, there is a difference of an order of magnitude between these scales. And so these observations suggest that the spatial scale of a wind farm affects both its mean generation per unit of land and also the extension of wakes. And so in our latest research, we wanted to characterize these spatial scales to understand how large a wind farm can be before its generation reaches energy replenishment limits, or how far apart large wind farms must be spaced to avoid inter-wind farm interference.
And what did you find?
So we hypothesized first that time scales related to the forces at play could give a physical explanation and characterize such a transition. Because of the large dimensions that wind farms are reaching, we considered the role of large-scale atmospheric physics, such as the Coriolis force and atmospheric pressure gradients, which become important for these large installations. And so the corresponding horizontal scale is obtained by multiplying the time scale by the geostrophic wind speed. And so to test our hypothesis, we performed a set of fluid dynamical simulations of very large wind farms by changing both the latitude at which they were located and the wind speed that they experienced. And so we showed that consistently with field observations, wind farms smaller than a characteristic length scale result in higher power densities and shorter wakes. And on the other hand, increasingly larger wind farms result instead in power densities that asymptotically reach their minimum and wakes that reach their maximum extent. And so we referred to these as mesoscale wind farms, as opposed to the smaller ones, which we refer to as submesoscale wind farms.
Although efficiency improvements can be made in small wind farms, you found that there was a limit to the efficiency in larger wind farms. Well, why is that?
As I mentioned previously, as the number and density of turbines in a wind farm increase, so does their likelihood of being affected by an upstream turbine, diminishing the energy generation. So if wind farms are composed of a relatively small number of widely spaced turbines, the likelihood of a turbine being affected by an upstream one is low, and this likelihood can be further mitigated by optimal layout design. For very large wind farms, all but the first row of turbines are mutually affected, and for such conditions, the replenishment of energy and momentum extracted by these large-scale wind farms is limited by horizontal pressure gradient and Coriolis forces. The energy is in fact supplied by the pressure gradient force within the planetary boundary layer and transported downward to the turbines. And it does not originate from the overlying free troposphere, which is above the planetary boundary layer. And the interaction of these forces ultimately provides geophysical limits to the power density of large wind farms. And more specifically, we found that regions with higher horizontal pressure gradients have a higher energy availability and consequently higher energy generation per unit surface area. And we also showed that for the same horizontal pressure gradient, the power density is higher in lower latitudes, suggesting that the replenishment of energy depends also on the degree to which the pressure forces are opposed by the Coriolis force. And these are some of the main implications of the limits to wind power density of large wind farms that we found in our studies.
Yeah, that last point was something that I found really interesting about your study, that it depends how far the wind farm is from the equator. Why is that?
So the reason is that one of the forces that controls both how much this limit is and at what scale it is reached is the apparent Coriolis force. This force depends on the latitude. It is zero at the equator and maximum at the poles. But now let's consider the dynamic behavior of the Coriolis force. So its response time when there is a sudden change in boundary condition is inversely proportional to the Coriolis parameter, which is also a function of the latitude. And so the response time of this force is then faster for higher latitude. And to get then the horizontal length scale at which the energy replenishment limits are hit, we have to multiply this response time by the wind speed. And so this implies that higher latitude wind farms would undergo this transition at a smaller size than would a lower latitude wind farm. And further, this would suggest that with other things equal, wind farm wakes at higher latitudes would be replenished with momentum and kinetic energy more rapidly than they would at lower latitudes. And so to summarize, we can say that for a given horizontal pressure gradient, which supplies energy to the turbines, the limits to the replenishment of energy are lower for higher latitudes, and the size at which these limits are reached is smaller farther from the equator. However, we have to say that at higher latitudes, we usually have higher pressure gradients that can sustain stronger winds. And so this provides more energy availability and compensate for the larger Coriolis effect.
And how will your research benefit those who are designing wind farms?
The characterization of such dimensional scales is of crucial importance for the planning of the next generation wind farms. For example, in 2020, wind comprised a 6% share of the electricity generated worldwide, as you said initially. And this figure is expected to substantially grow as more renewable energy is used in the effort to limit the carbon dioxide emissions and consequent increases in global average temperature. And under some energy transition scenarios, wind energy provides more than one third of the global energy needs by 2050. This indicates that the size of future wind farms may extend far beyond that of current installations. And so our analysis provides a better understanding and a physical explanation of the scalability of wind farms and defines the dimensions under which a wind farm can be considered sub-mesoscale or above which it can be considered mesoscale. But so why is this important? Whereas for sub-mesoscale wind farms, the turbines are less likely to be affected by an upstream one and power densities can be greater. For very large wind farms, all turbines are mutually affected, resulting in lower power densities. And so with this understanding, wind farm designers could predict how a prospective wind farm would operate and whether an optimal layout design would more effectively mitigate energy losses generated by wakes. At sub-mesoscale level, current methodologies that neglect the effect of Coriolis and focus on wake interaction minimization will remain the preferred choice. At mesoscale level, choosing the right combination of installed power density and wind farm size will become a matter of optimization to find the best economically viable solution. For mesoscale wind farms, while there exists an upper bound on the replenishment of momentum and kinetic energy within the boundary layer, this bound does not indicate what fraction of momentum and energy will ultimately reach the wind turbine blades. Optimal turbine layout and operation will still need to be considered even for very large wind farms, even though their effectiveness may be more limited. And lastly, designers could explore the possibility of designing multiple small wind farms as opposed to larger ones in the effort to maximize the energy generation over a given area and with a given number of turbines. And as wind energy development grows and suitable locations for potential wind farms become more populated, the length of wind farm wakes could be better predicted to understand the potential implication on neighboring wind farms in terms of energy generation and economic losses.
Well, that's really interesting, Enrico, and it certainly gives our listeners something to think about the next time they see a wind farm off in the distance. You can read more about Enrico and Ken's research in an article by Tim Wogan on the Physics World website. Just look for the headline, "Optimal Size for Wind Farms is Revealed by Computational Study." Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Enrico.
Thanks for having me.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this week's podcast, which is sponsored by the Electrochemical Society. Thanks to Enrico Antonini and Tushna Commissariat for joining me today. And a special thanks to our producer, Callum Jelf. We'll be back again next week, but in the meantime, do listen to the latest Physics World Stories podcast. It's called Deflecting Asteroids and Exploring a Metal World, and it features two scientists who are involved in robotic missions to asteroids. You can find all the Stories podcasts on the Physics World website or on your favorite podcast app.
Physics World.